here for a bit. I'm just thinking for you and all kinds of other stuff that is there. And I'm going to go over like a highlight screen of so it's a vendor. All names of vendors in the film, they're just empty races. Once you're ready. So I think that choice route should like not be so easy to use, so people would be discouraged from just sending us choice routes and saying that there's a problem based on the trade route. But we'll start with an IPv6 one first. Once upon a time, when we were controlling an IPv6, a customer asked for it, and we set it up for them. And it says, what we did is they obtained their NYI IPv6 machine from a whole other IPv6 machine. And quote the user, something is not right. As you can see, latency is huge. And the gravity of the situation is demarcated by the exclamation marks. Now indeed, between 3 and 17 milliseconds across half the country is you're not what you want. So they of course did not stop here, they proceeded to page for the trade routes. Just adding to the humor of the situation. Then the customer faces one from California to our data center in Atlanta. And now he's beginning to make some alterations because he can read state names. It doesn't make sense because it goes like through Europe and then back into America. And then we get a bit more. Another customer pays a trace route from Colorado to California, so MYI is totally out of the situation at this point. Quote the user, I just traced it and it's fine. Now, there's a customer, one, it's still doing milliseconds across half the country, and two, it's still going through Europe, like FRA and LOI, that's France and London. But I think that because their syntax is not spelled out, the user doesn't think it's going through Europe. Another trace route from Colorado to NYI, mentioned before, it's the exact same route as before, except the city names are in full now, so you recognize that it's going through Europe. So, most importantly, the first top tier has been well in excess of 100 milliseconds, which isn't, anything you want to do, or anything that's impossible unless you're an ISP doing PGP peering in a hard way, just configured PGP peering policy. So then, we pointed out the fact that the first top tier has been consistently been in countries across regions, and that this is extremely unusual. And so this encouraged customers to, I guess, stop using trace routes, and 5 days later, we were informed that the issue was because of something called a cerebral tunnel on Windows. I didn't care to research what that is because I was happy to have the ticket closed, but apparently it's just something that was often done to piss off citizens. Another one. A customer tries to reach NYI, a big customer for that, and we asked for a trace route. A customer replies with, do you mean this? And proceeds to case, So from the first hop, their guys block OGP and ICP outbound, even if it will work. So we asked if their IT department to have a trace route group, and the customer responds with, they can't. There's a bunch of stickers. Customer from all the way to the side of the world in the middle of the night says, we're going to request to find out while connecting to the server and also get some box because it's IP address. Find the trace route on its own, but we also look at it. The important statistic being the first hop outside the global network is about 30 milliseconds. So if you're doing that, just as soon as your ISP, your chances for across the world are really diminished. And it was 4 days by the time I got to it, I think he's running into Rio now, because I just be discussed. And this is the last trace route. So I just packed a box when I traced up to Kimberly, Robert. His router is at NYI in New Jersey. spoke earlier about and asked if you'd be prepared to do something. Unfortunately, this is a situation of looking at the trace route, and then based on solving that, maybe you're going to have a problem, as opposed to a problem of actual real-world traffic. Now, if you look at it, things are great overall, the destination is reached. But hops 6, 7, 8 don't answer. This is fine. As we know, all that means is that the drivers of those hops don't like answering these fragmentation needed by the empty set messages upon which trace route relies for its functionality. And I told you that. And to reply after a few hours, I think the problem are inside the human network, and I don't know why they had to make the time to go so short. I didn't edit these for added effect. How much benefit did they save from that? And then you count out. Of course, I don't care to interpret what that means, but figure it's so that's the end of the trace route section. I love trace routes, so I'm going to show you the we're going to jump straight to some test presses now. And this totally seems to be light right now, just
disk forensics?
And the legends, so you could be maybe even turn on the visible. Disk forensics. And the legends, anyway. Get a call saying, plus the machine is down, sure. The machine first runs Linux and has a 3-read hardware read controller and a 4-disk RAID array behind it. So that's 2 spray of sets and array of configuration. So naturally, the customer has not been monitoring this array. And we have a fake BIOS, and the RAID controller claims that errors have been encountered on every single disk in the set, which is a problem since you need, you know, at least 3 out of 4 or 2 specific ones for data integrity. This is kind of panicking, all kinds of Linux kernel panics, and it was huge at this point. And then I said, if you're thinking about it, that was the evening of the 8th. On the morning of the 9th, I came in, and shortly after that, took a guy off the customer, trying something like, oh, we're going to do something back up our business about 4 hours on my side. And I forget that that was and so, I don't know if you're here for reading those talks, but I don't like hardware reading. We can say that later, but just I don't like hardware reading. So, I opted to go around the controller at this point and plug these disks into my laptop using a bunch of these USB 8 data controllers. So, in theory, a 4-disk RAID 10 array can be built if any of the 3 disks are healthy, or if 2 of the unique disks in array 1, to make an array 0 are healthy. So with that in mind, I proceeded. Now, as an evaluator, you'll get what I'm saying. So, first you need 2 unique disks that comprise the RAID 0 array. So I'm just going to apply the first 32 kilobytes of all the disks I have on my laptop, because I'm also needing ones, the mean were 0 and 1. So what else do I need to know? I need to know the RAID stripe size. This is part of the way because the administrator said, of this machine for our customer's notifications, and I'll record this and take it. But this is a big deal because 64 kilobytes for the very part of the day to remain the maximum DNA request size for a data course. So obviously that's the most optimal stripe size for me. So I know the stripe size and the ultimate disk order, which 64 data goes first on the resulting disk and which goes second, and so on and so forth, otherwise that process is useless. And for this, I ran a file on each block device. And since this array 10 array was provable by the controller, we know that it had to have things like NDR, all the partition table, follow the partition scroll, and debuggers, and so on and so forth. While looking at that, file recognizes NDRs. And so indeed, I ran a file on the contents of my 2 unique disks. And one of them had an NDR from the beginning, the other one had data. The assertion was therefore from the most first disk, so now I ran those in the second disk. So it's time to write the preferred build. My reference choice for this kind of work is a combination of C and C++. So this program is just really simple. The error handling code exceeds the size of the actual code that doesn't work. You open up the block devices and you only go with, you write it to the resulting disk. Just work at a time, just take into account which one, which disk is first, and so there it is. This only seems easy in my perspective, by the way. Two blocks slowly because it was running off of the USB things. In the meantime, I've requested a replacement certificate for the history of people and anticipation of the fact that I was actually going to have to do the data back. One, this would be 3DSC, and two, there would be no more hardware data. It would be three-way human error. If you're interested in this, rate 10 is kind of an answer to the problem, as you just witnessed. The way it was really easy. You just take this gap and put it in the system, and that's just as easy as though there was no rate. That's the point about it. So,
three disks,
yes.
Okay.
So, to compile and then interior to be stored away. And they also were monitoring, so we're monitoring for them. So, rate recovery was complete on the 10th, it was a Saturday. So, after that was done, I had like a partition table. It had a significant problem. The first partition was the Linux native, that's for Dexter's slash boot partition. So I fixed that. The second one was this hexadecimal 8E, which I had to research, that is LVM. Since I do from previous and current, if anyone follows that, there is this GPU module that is LVM, which can do this stuff. And I did. I loaded this Linux OPM module, and I got a couple block devices. Slash dev, slash Linux OPM, log1, log1 was swap, not relevant to this. But log1.0.0 was their data like slash their slash version, basically, where all the database stuff that they were trying to do. So I fixed that. And then I copied all the files over. Some of their MySQL databases were a bit broken from all the times that their Linux system crashed when the disk became faulty. So there's a good recovery of that, but it's not really good discrimination. It's easy, so. There you have it. Probably, not kidding. A bunch of Google hours. I suddenly got this for DSD server now with easy to recover rate monitoring. And they gave us backup services because they had been encouraged to be proactive about their data recovery. Okay, that's halfway. Questions, comments, information? Everybody okay with it not being white? Okay, it's information true. Customer owns the computer requesting a hardware to run a server. Then they ask for information a few minutes after that in the same cabinet. They would do that. He's gone out for a while. Until the machines that they had asked us to reboot stopped responding to the power button, luckily with the panel, my answer, no thanks. And we investigated what was occurring, and we found a couple of daisy chain home power strips and this could be.
That's awesome.
They were kindly asked to give me a okay, one more thing. Frameworks, not a part of the leader. Moving on. We've got a large customer. It's my favorite customer. It's Phil's favorite customer. And every now and then, we have a very popular website which gains them a lot of money for HANG. Now let's define HANG. HANG means when you create a TCP connection to it, the system will not even run the accept system call on it. So you want to see slightly connected if you're using the internet. On the system side, the maximum number of Apache processes, which is 130, and this is per system, there's a load balancer and everything, so this has to sound all the systems. Maximum number of Apache processes, which is going to start, so you want to do it when you open serve these TCP connections. And the system was idle in terms of CPU time. Now, if something is on, there are two general reasons, right? One, it's sitting on the CPU doing something stupid and it's not done. And the other possibility is it's sleeping. It can sleep by way of waiting on something from the system call, so they're in the kernel. And so if something's sleeping, it's not using CPU time, and it's waiting on the kernel for some resource. Now this customer is so good in fact that they're doing their own web development. They just do editing on the site. They outsource the development to another company, which is also low. And this company did not have the skill to debug the problem. And of course, what follows logically is that it must be NYS fault. Okay. Oh, and hopefully that the big boss of this company had complained that you might have to work for Donald and Bob to get this problem resolved. Okay, so here we go. This here seems to be in retrospect, but it took me like a couple weeks. When it happened, I attached the debugger to one of these Conical Apache processes, and looked at some factors. Any for sure, we don't know if it's Apache being stupid or their code being stupid. And as you can see from near the top of the trace, there is a bunch of libtape and ISO stuff. Great. It might be the core as opposed to our Apache. That's the kind of responsibility marketing is really sure. So it's PHP. It's PHP, and it is sleeping on the epilog system call. So it's waiting on the kernel for a file log to return. Okay. So what now? So now we of course run the system call tracer on the same the idea that we were meant to be on. And there it is, F-block, and we get a bit more information now, and the information that it is a dedicated exclusive block. So only one can have the log at a time. On file descriptor 11, okay, that's on file descriptor 11. So we run LSOI with the appropriate types. There is a PHP session, SESS underscore now, some ground things completed, it's completed. And then I ran LSOF on just starting for PHP sessions. And these 6 plus 124 more, which that is 130, the maximum number of Apache processes on the system. They were all trying to cross lock these PHP session files. So what that translates to is there's a deadlock. There's a deadlock in this PHP framework on attempting to exclusively lock these PHP session master files. The developers were briefed of this and did their research and said, you know, this looks like a bugging framework. So while they were considering course of action, I wrote a shell script to basically kill -9 any attachment process that was calling this deadlock and that worked for a while. Any version of the framework was eventually released, and they rolled it out, and I turned the flipper off. And this was a case inside. This was quite profitable for us. And the developers a little bit less bullshit for us as well. The end.
Thank you. I've seen that.
Smaller.
Yeah.
You know how to do that?
No, I don't know how to do this.
Hello.
Hello. Is this good or is this soft?
Oh my God! Should I yell instead? Biometrics. Biometrics.
You have
to make that place.
Hey, it's nice to meet
you. How the hell's the hold on, this thing didn't,
let me see here. Hey, all right.
Can everybody see this? Can everybody hear me, or should I use the microphone?
Microphone.
Actually, whisper and don't use the mic.
Whisper into the mic.
What?
All right. So this is a quick footnote on super inappropriate cloud use, stuff that I've never seen. I don't know what this is.
Does anybody not know what the cloud is?
Yeah, they may not know what the cloud is.
Rain is coming out of it.
Okay. You guys are lucky. Whoever chose this cloud metaphor, and however this took, astounding. Clouds rain, it's lightning, they like...
Why? It shows a cloud metaphor, you know, you see really old network drawings, and like out there, away from your...
But Babette says, yes, they chose it because they have these old network diagrams of the cloud and INET. But for 10 years, I've been putting a skull and crossbones in that. Fireball down.
I know.
Yeah, but everybody knew each other back then. All right. You know, but this is a cloud. Oh boy, it looks awful here. I'll put these up. These are online. This is a volcano from Chile. Has anybody seen pictures of this from this year? Astounding. There's red, violent craziness with lightning and insanity. That's a cloud, man. All right, so there was this talk I gave at General Assembly, which is this kind of interesting, schooly kind of environment. And it was this summer. It was on business infrastructure growth. That didn't get a lot of people there. Materials are fictional, I'm not being paid for this presentation. The whole presentation was kind of boring, kind of fun too. It was basically like, I'm always down here in infrastructure, which is always the cost to the business, and then you have the application, which is profit, and you have the actual business, which is not profit, right? And so getting into how you scale infrastructure, and you got a startup over here, which is, I got three guys sitting in some guy's dining room. In an apartment, you got Netflix over here on the side. All right? So, this is the growth perspective and trajectory that everybody at every startup wants to see. Just like straight up, there we go. And everybody prepares for that 25 million user mark. And then if you're like Facebook, you really want to scale, like this is at the time of this talk, the actual number is like 595 million users. So let's do this. Let's start a startup. Let's be awesome. All right, so, we're in this living room. We're in one of these dining rooms, and we got a GoDaddy hosted, Yeah! All right, shared PHP, something with one MySQL database, and we can agree with our name, And then you have Facebook over here, and it's this little logo, and you can see it was the Open Hardware Project, which is genius. They're at a point of scale where they can put these open hardware specs out. They're really interesting and really neat. And they get every Taiwanese manufacturer on their knees, undercutting the next guy to give them what they want. Brilliant.
Anyway,
say what?
Like documentation.
Yeah, like documentation, like everything.
No NDAs?
Not only documentation, no NDAs, the specs are all online, it's worth the reading. People have heard of the Open Hardware Project and Facebook, so it's cool to check out. It's cool. Relevant to reality in our lives, cool to check out. Anyways, so here we got this guy, here's a street cart with sunglasses, and here's Amazon's fulfillment center, all right? So we're somewhere between these. And most of the work that I've done with companies, I put the box pretty big, right? But, come on, let's all in the room be honest with ourselves for a second.
Where did you get between 100 and 25 million? What's the highest you got?
Say what?
What's the highest you got between the 100 minimum and the 25 million?
I am not at liberty to speak about that.
Does that mean 10?
About 300 people.
Stabler did
have 200 users. That was the gist of the big talk, and then we came up with this fictional business and infrastructure growth, and it is quote-unquote fictional. This is not, of course, real. This doesn't look like anywhere on Everworks. Ever. All right, so you got our fictional business, right? And that's our little GoDaddy universe. Those are the services and the things that we care about that are infrastructure. We got our domain name, we got our database, we got our website. Hold on. Alright, so infrastructure. Hey, this is our cost. We got a $285 a month bill. We're paying about $3,400 annually, and over an 18-month cycle, that's $5,130. Alright? Yes, sir.
How did you get from the monthly cost to the annual cost?
I'll email me offline, I'll give you the spreadsheet, okay?
Did you choose 18 months because that's the arc of a startup?
You know, that's really great. I chose 18 months arbitrarily years ago. That's a funny question. I chose that arbitrarily because the company I was at were doing budget projections out 18 months, even though our budgets were set at 12. They were trying to cut into and give kind of some insight into the next year. And then I just kept using it, and 18 months is also like a Moore's Law cycle, depending on which version of Moore's Law you like and all that stuff. Whatever, 18 months just sticks. Because a year doesn't, whatever, it's more than a year, I don't know. Every single accounting guy I've ever talked to in the C 18 months just kind of rolls with it, so, I don't know. Somebody tell me a different number and I'll use it. So look, we're growing up. Our little business is growing up, and we've taken all these same services, and we're in Rackspace now. We've got all of this stuff in Rackspace's cloud. Or actually, they're managed hosting, let's call it that. Rackspace managed hosting. We moved again. Now we're in the planet. Now we're in managed hosting land. Now we're in awesomeness, right? We got real metal. Real server once over. And all right, so our infrastructure, monthly recurring cost, $860. So it's over 10 grand annually, over $15,000 in 18 months, all right? We're growing up in the world here. So at the planet, now we have a need to do prod and dev. That's way too expensive for us to have our dev servers up because now we have these some people working on stuff when we're running a business kind of halfway. And so we go to Linode and we got our virtual hosts in the cloud at Linode. That kind of works for us, except it's a different Linux and it's a different number of things. But that's fine. It's fine. So we got the legacy GoDaddy, we got the plan, we got Linode, we're paying for all this stuff. Now we're going to take our source code out of our production servers and our repositories and put it over on GitHub. And we're going to pay for the commercial GitHub account because that's awesome. It's just there for us and it's all safe. And of course it's backed up. There's never any problems in there. Awesome. Cool. So GitHub. And now customer service needs live person. Yeah. You know, like, because we've got few people doing customer service, but not enough, so we got one person taking a load off of our customer service, whatever our business is. And now I need file backup files and backups, and now we're off into AWS. Now we got Amazon Web Services stuff, stack it out, this stuff's, hey man, we're paying by the byte that we throw across the net, we're paying by the byte we keep on disk for months, it's fine. And so now our primary bird provider just got purchased. Shit. So now they're software, this is correct. And then, okay, so our existing production environment is now end of life and grandfathered in, has pretty much no support, and have high turnover at the company, and oh shit, so like nobody knows how our stuff works when we call them anymore, and it takes like 3 days to get most trivial change done, and oh my god, like, what if we had a real problem? Oh, it's boards. All for us. So this is getting dicey, but you know what? We're growing as a business and we don't have time to think about that shit, all right? So we're moving on to now, like, we're going to stick with this and pretend that this is not a problem for the moment. And now we've got Vertical Response and Zebra, we're moving our mail and we've got a whole Zebra thing and a Zebra partner and all this gnarliness and it's paid for and it's just like Exchange, exactly. Sort of that, except just you, because it's open source, not with you, but it is. Anyways, so now we're paying for that, we got that thing in place, we got Vertical Response, we're doing our bulk mailers through these, you know, spammers that everybody has agreed are okay. And, you know, we got all our stuff going, and oh yeah, monitoring. So we got Uptime Inspector up here, yeah, they're a great service for us. And we got Datadog. They're taking all of our stuff. We load their stuff into our app, and they shuffle it out to their stuff, and they give us charts and graphs of how many times developers code, and it's his head against the wall. And oh yeah, now we got Hoptoad. This is great. So what's Hoptoad again? Oh yeah, this is logging. So yeah, we're piping out all of our log data through little daemons that are running on our servers to Hoptoad, and they're giving us basically a graphical interface. Did I say graph? I don't know what that is. Sorry. And now
Yeah, marketing came in and slid in Google Analytics.
Which icon is red?
Which what?
Which icon is red?
I lost it underneath one of the others. It's underneath, Grant's underneath one of those. And we got Google Analytics in the site now, and this is how we're measuring our traffic on a daily basis and responding to, like, so, shit, site's really slow, everything's all messed up. We're going to have to check analytics in an hour when it updates. Anyways, the, right, so we got all this stuff going on, and we're kind of, going along here. What are we just even at? I can't even see. Oh, yeah, Dyn DNS. So we got a Dyn DNS guy who called and told us that he's cheaper than Ultra DNS, and so the boss went for it, and it's awesome, because these guys are hosting our DNS, right? Because we need the registrar we got GoDaddy. They suck, of course, so we wouldn't want them to have our DNS servers, so let's, keep GoDaddy for our registrar and use Dyn DNS.
Okay. Which residential provider do they use for their
connectivity? I don't want to get too trouble.
Is it Verizon?
Yeah, it's something. Yeah, it's something small. So look, you can't see these dots. They look real bright on my screen. But you got a bunch of dots of all these services outside of our main cluster. We got our production universe, which, by the way, since that first slide, there's a ton of stuff going on. We put up all these servers in here. We got all these services running on all these servers. We got a dev universe here over in Lino. We got Amazon Web Services. That's what the bulk of our, bulk of what we think about every day is. And then we have all of these little things, like, floating around in our environment. We don't quite know what they look like. So it's kind of awesome, actually, because it's hard to see. And, like, this is what, you're gonna say, you hire a systems guy, and you throw him pretty good, and the interview grew the guy on Canoe, and he grew him on, like, all kinds of, like, classic principles, and doing things simple, and process, and then you sit him down, first day on the job, and say, yeah, you're gonna be secretary of, like, web logins. How's that sound? Spend most of your day chasing people down, trying to clean all this crazy stuff. Like, this is not systems administration. This is, say what? Well, actually, I can very clearly say, because they're out of business, part of
me. I think the phrase RBI is trademarked by Devo.
But they're cool guys. Alright, so yeah, what are we doing with all this stuff? So, like, this is Web 2.0. This is what we're doing with all this exciting new fancy technology. Now, let's get a monthly recurring cost again. Let's revisit these fun things. We're now up to 24,000. With all that stuff, those are based on real world numbers, even though it's not a real company. But it's all based on real stuff. That's much basically. Tasted very bad. 24,800 something a month. So you got 25 grand a month. We got 298,000 a year. We got 447,000 in 18 months. That's a ton of money.
Still less than your salary.
Stock options are double that, right?
Right. And we still just have this kind of small little deck of servers and maybe like one kind of systems-y guy who runs around logging emails, work pages all day, and a bunch of web developers and the rest of the business. Okay. So, then, oh wait, let's throw Puppet and Chef into this mix. It's going to make this so much better. It's going to make this awesome. Yeah, I don't love that. So this was basically the only part of the this talk to basically show the cloud case that I'm building. What I did with the rest of the talk, and maybe if it was just like a show of hands, maybe if people want to see the rest, let's see if I can make it something more nice for me and less business boring. I have my spreadsheets doing this more. Basically to make it to show like here's some ways to amortize these solutions because I'm more interested in doing engineering work in a day. And if you figure out how to make the financial and business case for this stuff, you actually get to do engineering work. It's fun. So then the rest of the talk is colored by the numbers. It talks about how to amortize the cost of what your hardware costs. All kinds of fun stuff about why I like Graybox and all kinds of cute stuff. But the end cost comparisons turn out to be really spectacular because there's some salaries in here. right, in these savings, right? And so over 18-month spread, they got $447,000 against $271,000. The bad part is that businesses are going to buy a bunch of gray box kit. You have to get a lease separate or go out and scrounge up cash and drop it on the table and say, here.
Is Boris' salary in there? Or?
Obviously not. So, you know, and then what you get out of the rest of this is that basically all of that cloud stuff, if you're to take and take kind of crude measurements out of what you get in computational resources, are actually ridiculously paltry compared to what you end up getting when you start actually bringing this stuff in-house, building systems teams that actually take responsibility for their actions and what they do for business, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what you really get into at the end of the day is like, this is the cat food I get for my cat. And if I corner the bodega, say what?
You have a cat?
I have a cat, yes. Yes.
No, I was surprised. I mean, we don't look like a dad that gets kissed. You're both bald. Liz, it was
coming. Yes, I do love it. I do love a cat. The beginning here, look, so here's the box I buy. It's one and a quarter pound. It's the most expensive thing by, you know, over twice as much for if I were to buy a 16-pound bag of cat food from Petco, right? Something like that. Sorry, where did that come from? So pretty much, like, that's pretty much the gist of this fund is basically just, like, take the, what is it? I'm being told, oh, 10. The gist of the talk is to basically kind of start basically broaching this conversation of like, I don't know what DevOps is doing for everybody in the world, but at this point I'm kind of sick of that being an excuse for me to have another web login to some terrible resource that's being mismanaged by some people.
Which is Twitter handle?
Yeah, I don't have any Twitter. I'll give you a shell on a box that I'm in a lot. How about that?
I have those.
And part of the deal here is basically not to rip on the cloud. Let me actually bring this back because I get into one thing that's actually positive about all this cloud stuff. But it's at a different scale, so it doesn't really matter right now. So Netflix use the cloud, how many people have read much about that? Actually, the big heckler right in the middle here, he's the guy who showed me all this stuff in the first place. All right, so Netflix is used in the cloud pretty spectacular as far as this cloud stuff. They have an interesting problem with their streaming videos business, right? And that is they never have enough servers as close to the end recipient as possible, ever, right? So they're doing all this RTSP stuff, the streaming protocol fund, and they've got a really cool web client and all this fun stuff, and we have to put the coin in the slot and get the movie out. And so what Netflix did is they built this really awesome app, and they said, we're going to target every single cloud vendor that exists. We're going to make internal APIs for our programmers to use stuff for every single one of these vendors that we use. Amazon's their biggest cloud vendor. And they built an application where they don't actually shove any PII or any other financial data, and really in their problem, in the case of Netflix, their big case is that they don't want to have whole movies sitting on servers that could get rooted, right? This is the end of their business. They have a bunch of whole movies out in the world, they get stolen, after a while this adds up, and after a while, nobody cares about paying Netflix, and the people they're getting movies from don't want to get the Netflix data, right? So they start losing their distribution deals. So what they did is they built these RTSP streaming clients, video streaming clients, and they take the shard up and do all this fun, you know, fun words. But basically, they chunk some of all the videos and distribute them to all of these servers that they light up in geographic regions. They take full advantage of various companies' cloud APIs and all this fun stuff. So basically, if any one of these little AWS servers gets hacked, cool, who cares? You got like a chunk of a movie that really doesn't matter outside of the Netflix application. It's not that useful to you. But then you just get like the keys to the castle or something. Oh.
Talking about RTSP.
Real time streaming protocol. RTSP. Isn't that what they're using?
It's real time protocol.
RTSP.
It's just RTP.
RTV, okay, stand corrected. But you get the gist of this. It's basically, they basically built something that actually uses the clouds in a cool and interesting way. And they have a real reason to do that. A tremendous number. There's a huge user base that wants to watch movies. So with that, like, the three guys in the living room don't have that problem. So this idea, oh, and also, you know, one thing about this is also interesting about Netflix is they have a couple of really awesome and well-maintained, like, physical plants where they have these great data center facilities where they run all their core operations. And those are really where all the movies live. That's really where all the business runs. That's really how it works. So that's pretty cool and exciting to use the cloud. The rest of it, though, and it's just, you know, it's the same old game in IT. Anybody will sell you snake oil, can in any moment in time. So never ever trust sales guys. Does anybody have any questions? George said stall for 10, so I'm gonna stall for like one more.
Are you sure you're not a salesman?
Yeah. Do you have a colo you'd recommend? You sure you don't want to recommend a colo?
I'm not sure. I understand your meaning.
Why is it that I
can
never find a streaming movie on Netflix that I
want to
watch?
Oh, why is it that you can never find a streaming movie on Netflix? I can't answer that one. I found the same.
You give Netflix some money. The economy's turning around.
Yeah, I really don't know how to answer that. Question in the back.
How does this tie in with jails?
You asked it, so I'll give it like a minute. And I'm trying not to make this painful. This actually ties in a lot with jails. So when I was at BioWithMe, the one thing that all the very cloud happy, everybody was really like cloud, everything at word, all this stuff, because we're not proving the servers fast, we're not doing automated doing anything, which is ridiculous. One thing everybody really found that they cared about was this idea that they provisions new servers for development use for other application, you know, construction going, that there was a concept that they could do this instantaneously. And that we could turn on as much resources as we want, as fast as we want, anytime we want, to enable this kind of wild development that we want to get done. That really wasn't the case. And what really ended up happening is everybody would have to sit around and wait until the person with the checkbook could okay whether or not we could turn on another AWS instance or not, right? And you ended up looking at all kinds of people who were non-technical into this technical need. So in that environment, we actually were working against both jails and then primarily jails to basically build what was being done in a private cloud. I think it was Javier
Frias,
thanks. Javier Frias is the first guy who ever heard of an interview again for the company, this company I was talking about in business. And Javier Frias said, private cloud. And I was like, private cloud. God, I hate that vocabulary. But sure, fine. Private cloud. Using virtual machines or, you know, segregating your resources amongst mutually untrusted users or systematically, you know, agendas. Awesome. Yeah, private cloud. Cool. So that's kind of where this talk has to do with jails, because the infrastructure that we propose has developed an environment that's filled with jail servers that are built from shell scripts that developers run. Kind of like Amazon.
So do disks run slower or faster at jails on S3?
That's a really good question. It depends on how many touch files you have to. Sorry.
Who puts contents in files? All we need is right there
in
the file.
Right. Don't put, yeah, just gotta vote to, I think it will end this on a note, to not to put content in files, but to just use the inode abuse of it.
Well, actually, it's the file name, which is not the inode.
Yeah.
In the directory.
All right, so everybody, very happy holiday stuff, and thanks.
All right.
Oh, and if anybody wants a picture of Lynn with Floyd, my guy, I'll put it on this.
Never heard of him. Yeah. Adam is the next speaker, the last speaker tonight, and he should be here. 15 minutes ago, he texted me and said he'd be here in 10 minutes. So I just texted him and said, which 10 minutes? How many 10 minutes? But he should be here shortly. Intermission, open discussion, any preference?